Mother Teresa came to my clinic and she saw these little girls with calipers, and she wrote in our visitor's book, these are works of peace and works of joy. So think about it like that. And so it was so nice that we did achieve, maybe a decade later,
wow,
but we did achieve that.
Hello and welcome to the Women of the Future podcast, a podcast made in collaboration with the Women of the Future programme, a platform built to unlock a culture of kindness and collaboration among leaders, as well as support and celebrate the successes of women. I'm Kim Rowell and I won the media category at their awards in 2018 in recognition of my continued work as a commissioner, producer and children's author, particularly within the mental health remit. I'll be talking to my guests on this podcast about their careers, who or what gave them their first big break, their successes, failures, and inspirations along the way, and how they came to be a part of the Women of the Future Network. Dr. Swati Piramal has used her background in medicine, public health, and business to change the trajectory of healthcare, education, and public policy in India. She is one of India's leading scientists and industrialists and is involved in public health and innovation. Dr. Piramal is also a director of Piramal Enterprises, one of the leading Indian multinational companies in healthcare, financial services, and information management. With the intention of providing affordable medicines to reduce the burden of disease globally, Piramal Enterprises supplies medicines to over 100 countries and has a portfolio of over 200 patents. Dr. Piramal also helps promote health in rural India with mobile health services, women's empowerment projects, and supporting community education that creates young leaders as a director of the Piramal Foundation. As the first woman president of India's Apex Chamber of Commerce in 90 years, she helped influence important public policies and governance, also serving as an advisor to the Indian Prime Minister in science, technology, and economic policy. Dr. Piramal is a leader who certainly makes a positive difference to the community and the world. Her contributions in innovations, new medicines, and public health services have touched thousands of lives.
I grew up in Mumbai, and it was in what we call the Queen's Necklace. It's called Marine Drive, and it was Art Deco building in the 1960s, and today it looks a bit like Nice and Miami, rows of Art Deco buildings. So I grew up there. I went to a school in Nepean Sea Road, which was the home of many of the Maharajas who, at the time of independence, the time of British times, owned big castles. So my school was actually in a castle of one of the Maharajas, wow, called the Kutch Castle. It was called Walsingham House School. And it was started by two ladies, a Mrs. Tree and a Mrs. Adcock, who came by boat many years ago. And their idea was to educate young women. And they taught them very good English. It was a Protestant school and we learned all the prayers. And it was just about teaching young girls very good English, theater, Shakespeare, you know, all the poems of Milton. And it was, I think, a wonderful time because it was the 60s, flower power, very gentle part of the world history. And it was, I think, the happiest time of your life when you're in school. So I grew up in a very happy family. My parents were there, my cousins. And we lived in what is called a joint family. It's my grandparents, aunt, uncle, their children. And everyone shared everything. We learned to adjust everything. We never said, this is mine, I want more of this. It was all about being together and just enjoying family life.
And did you enjoy school and education? Were you quite a diligent student and dedicated, or did you know where your passions were quite early on?
I knew exactly where I was going, and I knew that I wanted to be a doctor. I loved my biology and my science. I can still draw the section of a leaf the way it was.
I remember doing that.
And I think the teacher teach you perhaps very fluent English, theater, poetry, literature, music. And reflecting back, I think it really helped me in my later career because it meant a lot of public speaking. When I went to Harvard, everybody could speak better than me. They were more learned than me, I thought. But because I could speak very well, which I learned in school, I think it gave me an equal footing that, yes, I wasn't intimidated by everyone. And, you know, I could hold my own if I had to speak about medicine or something that I was passionate about. So I think school gives you that grounding to learn what you really love to learn.
And as you were looking to take your first steps into the working world, I read that in the mid-1970s, you came across a girl affected with polio. And was this when you were at medical school?
That's right.
It'd be great if you could tell me what happened and how that maybe inspired you to carry on the trajectory that you are.
Yes, you know, our medical college is in one of the seven islands of Mumbai called Parel. It has a history. It was where Hapkin invented the first vaccines. And it is also the center of the textile industry, which is India's oldest industry. So the workers used to come from the villages, come to Mumbai, which was endemic for polio. And all their children would be paralyzed with the virus because at that time there was no vaccine. And I saw this little girl who was paralyzed from neck below. She couldn't walk. And I thought it was a very troubling sight that a child, a little girl who cannot walk, and I decided to do something about it. So I got all my school friends or college friends together and said, can we talk about vaccination? It was thought at that time that there was an evil spirit and it would come into the little baby and that's why they were paralyzed. And we said, no, it's a vaccine. And if you take this vaccine, then you will be cured. But people would take a vaccine but not finish the three doses. I was very troubled. In fact, I was married. I told my father-in-law that this is my problem. I'm trying to do my best, but nobody's finishing the vaccine's three doses. So they don't come back. He says, why don't you do one thing? You give them a 1 meter piece of cloth, which I will happily donate to you, because we were textile mill owners at that time. And we were making millions of meters of cloth. And so we give 1 meter of cloth to the child when he came back after for the third dose. And had all these little
that's clever.
Comes with this Baba suit made of striped cloth. And they were so wonderful because they all finished the dose. And about 10 years later, we had created this no polio zone with the efforts of young medics, young medical students. Polio vaccination at that time became a national, you know, movement. And it was so nice that you could not see it anymore. So I actually closed the clinic because we didn't have these awful cases anymore. So it was my first understanding that public health can actually be very useful and much less costly than treatment. Because the vaccine costs 10 rupees, is 1 meter cloth costs another 10 rupees. Whereas if I treated that child, it cost me nearly 1,000. So I knew that prevention was better than cure. It was my first experience of doing something right.
Like you say, offering that incentive, but you were quite dogged in your determination to get people to take up the immunization, weren't you? Because you went door to door, but also did you perform street plays as well to illustrate what your messaging was? That sounds ingenious to me.
Yeah, it was fun also because we were just young and, you know, we had hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
But I do remember how I felt 10 years later when I didn't have any children in my clinic.
That's amazing. And you treated 25,000 children in the first year. Is that right?
Correct.
That's incredible.
Mother Teresa came to my clinic and she saw these little girls with calipers and she wrote in our visitor's book, these are works of peace and works of joy. So think about it like that. And so it was so nice that we did achieve, maybe a decade later,
we
did achieve that.
And I mean, mentioning Mother Teresa, I think we all look to guiding lights or mentors within our own lives and career journeys. Did you have that? Was there a standout person for you or someone that you wanted to emulate or inspired you to be a better person? Did you have that in your life and do you have it now?
Yes, indeed. I think Mother Teresa was one of them. And she, when I met her, she was this little woman. She was so tiny. But her face was one of the most beautiful I've ever seen. And that meeting really still inspires me into thinking we can do something. And just an aside story, I have 1 minute. She said, come with me. I want to go to this suburb of Mumbai. And you take me there to my little center in Vasai, which is about an hour away. On the way, there was a huge traffic jam. And all the thousands of people were waiting for us. And she said, come, let's pray. And I thought to myself, how can you pray in a traffic jam? And how will this happen? But miraculously, the trucks parted and we reached on time. I've never forgotten that because she inspires you to do things like that, to pray when nothing else works. And I found that very useful in life as you have ups and downs and you think about spirituality as your guiding force. And then I studied the Gita, which is our philosophy text. My son was 17 and he said, my teachers told me to study this text before I go and study in Italy. And we sat down with him and we learned about the Gita, which we hadn't previously in our busy careers. And it is a source of great inspiration. It's a source of great values, the three values that we have today in everything that we do in our work, in our home, our knowledge, action, and care. And how we implement those values in our work, how we do it at home, that's like a continuing inspiration.
You've had such an illustrious career and you were awarded the Padma Shri, which is one of India's highest civilian honours by the President of India in 2012 for your contribution to the science and technology business and so many other accolades. It's hugely inspiring. But I was wondering for you, is there a standout moment that you're particularly proud of or something that you will always want to advocate for or put out into the world? Has there been a moment in your life or career that you has really brought a smile to your face?
I think two, just one last week when the current president of India, she's a tribal leader and a teacher. She invited my husband and me for tea to Rashtrapati Bhavan to give us a pat on the back, so to speak, about the health and work that we are doing in the tribal areas and in health and in education. And it just made me feel so nice that, we are called just for a cup of tea and just to say that go on carrying on this work. So it's not an award or anything, but it was just that feeling. And second, what made me smile was when they told me that I have the award from the President of France, the Legionnaires Award, and the French Minister of Trade, Catherine Colonna, came. And I decided to speak in French. Now, the last time I learned French was in school. I had no idea how to speak it. But I wrote my speech and then I translated in French. I had many friends who live in Paris. And I said, look, I want to do it really French accent. So I learned it. I practiced thousands of times. And then I delivered a 5-minute speech in French. And what amused me was that the minister thought I could speak really fluent French.
You fooled them. You did it.
So she was speaking about me in French and I just nodded.
You know, yes, I don't know what you're saying.
But it brought a smile to my face saying that, yes, I think perhaps I could do it exactly right. And, your accent is so English. It's not French. And then you have to get that right.
And how did you first hear about the Women of the Future program and how have you been involved with them?
So Pinky Lilani, the founder of this program, is a friend of mine. I think I met her many years. I cannot remember how I met her, but she is one of the kindest people that I know. And she's one of the most You know, she's dogged about making you being your full potential. And I don't know why she should do that, because she cares so deeply for people that she would keep asking me, have you written the book that you were supposed to write? Or have you, or have you done this? And I said, no, no, I will do it. But she's so caring. And I noticed that whenever she walks on the street, she has in her pocket this little bag of chocolates, of coins, and she hands it out to people who she feels need that little bit cheerful, or they need thanks, or they need they're just on the street, and she brings a big smile to their face. So she is one of the kindest people, and she gave me the award. And then I had the privilege of meeting so many other women who she had also awarded. It was very inspirational. And I see that she continues to find these women who are totally in their own lives inspirational. I went to an award function where there was a police officer, UK police officer, and how she was so brave, and she was of Indian origin, and yet she was a police officer, and she was serving the community. And I was so happy to meet people like that. So I'm on the jury of various programs of choosing the kindest people in the world, which is always fantastic.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I have a few quick fire questions for you. So if you're ready, I will go for it. What would you describe as your greatest success?
Making a positive difference in a few people's lives. And you don't actually know when you do that, but when a few years later they come and thank you for something small that you may have done, and then that makes you feel, okay, I could impact that person's life, whether it's one of my medicines, one of the new drugs that we innovated, whether it's just the work that we do in the deepest, remotest, hardest part of India or in the world. And if we bring innovation of clean water, health, and education to so many people's lives, I think in the end that gives me the satisfaction that, yes, you made that tiny bit of difference in somebody's life.
You're being very humble. You've helped thousands of people. But yes, I'm so impressed by you and your work. But what would you say is your greatest failure?
Starting a restaurant.
I take it didn't go well.
I love cooking like Pinky, and I love feeding people something new. And so I started an Italian restaurant, and it was in the middle of a mall. And here was this fine dining restaurant, wrong type to be in a mall in Mumbai. The families came, and you know, my Italian chef was quite frazzled. He put salt into the pizza, and everyone, he was so upset. And yeah, it didn't go well. So my husband said, I think you better decide whether you're doing science or whether you're being a restaurant.
Oh, I like that. So the mantra of Women as a Future is kindness and collaboration. What does that mean to you in both your personal and professional life?
So kindness is something perhaps you can learn by other people's example. And when you see somebody doing it, and you see somebody being kind, and you see the ripple effect of that kindness on the world around that person, around the whole place that you live in, it creates an intangible positive effect in our work, in our offices. And you know, even somebody who has left will remember the time that they had there because of the way they were treated with respect and kindness. So I think it's something that you can learn. It's a skill that you can learn. About collaboration, I am pretty sure that nothing worthwhile can be done alone. You have to have a team. You have to take your family with you. You take your children with you. You take everyone together in work and create a team. And the team delivers maybe 100x of what you can if you're alone. It just, nothing worthwhile can be done alone, I think. And I think that it's just so nice to collaborate and converge ideas, to have the diversity of thinking of innovations, which you can't if you're the same type of people. When you have different kinds of people, then you have new ideas, you have innovation, and then collaboration really gives you amazing results.
I like that. Nothing worthwhile can be done alone. I'm going to take that as a quote for life. Is there anything that scares you?
Actually, recently I wrote about a gentleman who's a friend of mine. He's 90 years old. And at 80, he started mountaineering. He went up the Annapurna base camp. That would scare me.
I think I'm with you on that. That sounds terrifying.
I said, I went with skiing with my children and that slippery slope. I was quite a I said, no, I'm a good girl from Mumbai.
Not for me.
Any no snow anywhere near. And what is the slippery stuff? And I thought, fall off the cliff. That was scary. And it's just thinking about going at 80 on a mountaineering expedition or living alone with my dog or, you know, just cooking for myself. I think those things I wouldn't do. I think not me. So, yeah. So I think it's scary, but some people do achieve this idea of solitude. They achieve this idea of doing things even well into their 80s and 90s.
What's left on your to-do list?
Oh, lots. You know, I thought I would happily retire and let all my everything. And then I walked into a room where there was this young girl who was around 17. And she explained how in her tribe, in the very remote part of India, there were still tribal healers who would tell mothers, okay, you know, sacrifice your child. I thought, that's not going to happen in my country. It's not 100 years after independence. It's not something that we can, even if it's the rarest thing, even if it's the most remote, darkest part of India. Mm-hmm. I said, that's not going to happen in my country. So I worked even harder to say, you know, to tell people to get education. And I was so inspired by this young girl. She started a self-help movement with 300 other youth people who would do all these wrong things, you know, alcoholism and really being old-fashioned about not taking medicine when it is needed and things like that, not taking vaccines. So I still think there's so much work to be done. And that wakes me up in the morning. It's okay, you've got lots to do here. I really thought I would happily, you know, just have a relaxed time, but it's not to be.
Thank you so much for your time in speaking to me today. I'm immensely grateful and thank you for everything you've done and everything you continue to do. You are such an inspiration.
Thank you. Really nice to meet you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Woman of the Future podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not give us a rating and review? You know you want to. For more about the Women of the Future Awards, network and initiative, please visit www.womenofthefuture.co.uk. See you soon!